What is up, everyone? It's Nate here with the Plaudio Slave Podcast. I'm here with my buddies Twan and Tony. How you guys doing tonight?
Good, man.
What's up? What's up? Feeling good, man. Feeling good. Feeling great. How are you?
Nice, nice. It's November 19th, 2020, coming at you with episode 37 tonight. So it's a Thursday night, chilling, long week with work for us. We're going to nerd out tonight, and Tone's got a little set list for you. What's going on?
Yeah, first, hit us up on the socials, at Plaudio Slave on Twitter and at Plaudio Slave on Instagram. And thanks for all the interaction we've had this week. It's been a pretty nuts week there, right? We've had a ton of people talking to us and hitting us up there and interacting with our posts. So that's been really cool. Same with Twitter. I mean, Rage Against the Machine, like, in our tweet the other night was pretty fucking awesome. Huge. Not going to lie. Got pretty excited about that. So, yeah. set list tonight. We've got a couple quick items, some stuff we've talked about in the past and something we haven't talked about before. We've talked about the artist, but not necessarily this story. So a few things there. And then the main segment, the bulk of the episode tonight, we will be talking about, we don't have a name for it yet. We just actually talked for like 10 minutes trying to come up with a name and we get nothing. But it's we're going to go through different numbers of albums that we think are a band's best. So we're going to pick a band, each of us, and say, yeah, this band's best album was their first album. This band's best album was their second album, and so on and so forth, up to five. So there'll be 15 albums in there for you guys to think about, listen to on the playlist, all that fun stuff. So yeah, that's what we get going tonight. But first things first, Twan, Scooter Braun making some money this week, huh?
Yeah, so Scooter Braun, his Big Machine Label Group sold the Taylor Swift Masters to, was it Ithaca Holding Group? Some holding LLC for $300 million. That's an M, which is a massive amount of money. So, you know, I first saw that headline and you almost do a double take. I'm like, is there an extra zero in there? And then you start thinking about it and it's like, well, no, I mean, you own it from here on out. I mean, certainly there is some kickback to someone who we'll talk about here in a second. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's yours. You know what I mean? Taylor Swift song is used in a commercial, you know, they got to go through you. So what do you guys think? Obviously the big price tag comes to mind, right?
Oh, it's crazy. And you just mentioned the commercial. So any kind of shows on Netflix and stuff like that in between the commercials, you spot things like Taylor Swift, either songs are literally like cameos all the time. So everyone's kind of looking for a way to pivot. And yeah, it looks like a public war in a lot of ways, you know, it's a huge price tag. What do you think, Tim?
I got a couple questions about it. So I know recently Taylor was the statute of time is gone. She can now re-record some of this music or all of this music if she chooses to do so. And I think she is doing that. I think I read that.
Yeah.
And so how long is that $300 million going to get this Ithaca Holding Group's through before she's able to record all of it? And then say you want to hear Shake It Off in a commercial, which she's done in the past. And they're like, well, we're going to take the new one. We're not going to take the old one. You know, not necessarily that song, but just generally speaking, we're going to go with Taylor's version of this, not her old version that you own, rando company that Scooter Braun still gets some kickback on somehow.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
So, right. Like I wonder how much that investment's going to pay off for them. It paid off for Scooter when he bought it for $150 a couple of years back. Now he's doubled up.
So who's the governing body that's going to say, hey, Taylor, your new version is 99.99% the same as the old version? You know what I mean? Like, who's to say she just doesn't hire a kick-ass engineer or mixer and just they kind of tweak it a little bit? I mean, this is...
There's a whole can of worms here.
Yeah, I mean, the statute of limitations, whatever it's called, that's her out. I mean, you're right. How fast can she re-record these?
I can just see everyone jumping on this train, too, when you think about it. You know, just taking full control of their masters if possible. So it just blows my mind.
It's funny you say that. Scooter Braun was Kanye's manager at one point.
Yeah.
And I still think that they're friendly. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think they're still friendly. And Kanye's been preaching the get your masters, own everything yourself mantra for a little while now. So he's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth if that's the case because of what they've done to Taylor. Like, seems a little ridiculous for him to go both ways with that. But I don't know. It does make sense, especially nowadays, for an artist to own their own thing and to do their own thing, especially if they're someone the size of Taylor Swift.
Yeah. I mean, Kanye, he's obviously, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth and every other part of his body. But
pissing on Grammys, bro.
Well, one thing I just thought of is, like, if you're making that big of a purchase to this Ithaca Holding Group, you've obviously crunched your numbers, and her streaming revenue must be absolutely bananas that they feel they can recoup it in X amount of time. And the whole re-recording thing, they must have factored that in. Just shows you the money out there. And if you're her, imagine if she never sold her soul when she was young. I mean, she'd be a billionaire by now.
And she's definitely a multimillionaire, right? I mean, and she's definitely on her way at some point. But yeah, 36.9 million spent monthly listeners on Spotify alone a month.
Wow.
So that's
wow.
Double that with the, you know, Apple, because Apple, maybe, okay, maybe not double, but add probably what, another 40% with Apple. So that's crazy.
And that's listeners, and you know, people aren't just listening to one song, you know.
Right. That's 60 to 70 million monthly listeners between the two major DSPs, not to even think about what people do on YouTube.
Wow. That's insanity.
Yeah. A lot of money there, right? So I guess even if they only have it viably for a few, 4, 5, 6 years while she records everything, probably still going to make some money on it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of their angle too. Like you were saying, like, what is the value proposition? And the only thing that I could even fathom is, well, this is her like vintage vocals in that time, and that's worth something because it kind of, you know, is a snapshot of that time and when the song was written, all the passion behind it and all the marketing that went into it. It's like, that's the original pressing, really. So that's the really only, that's only the only value there at all. But, you know, having something re-recorded now too, if she is on top of her game, like you said, Twan, well then shit, she's still amazing. But who knows, because it could be, you know, voice tracked, or there's a lot of magic these days. But
I mean, she's so versatile that she could re-record them to mirror the original version. So it's almost like a remastered type of thing. But then she has the flexibility to strip it down and go acoustic. I mean, it's limitless. And even though she's kind of sold off those, she's still in a better position than Ithaca, because now she can I'm sure she has control of everything here on out. She's learned her lesson. Mm-hmm. And she can kind of pull a reanimation new old songs with with all this new stuff, and hopefully it's better than that.
Well, and her fans would eat that stuff up too, right?
Yeah,
they would be all about she just re-released Red, say, or something from her very early days as a country artist before she went full on just pop star. And it would be cool to hear maybe some of those country songs in a pop sensibility, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she holds the cards now, I would imagine, and you know, it makes sense for her, and she's not losing. I mean, psychologically, and what's gone on with her and Scooter and stuff in the past, yeah, that sucks, but money-wise, she's just fine. She'll be okay.
Yeah, she's so versatile that imagine you know, her redoing Red with the soundscapes of Folklore. You know what I mean? It would hit. It would totally hit.
Yeah.
I think the thing that is weird to me is, well, not weird to me, it makes sense, but good for her, I guess, is she was approached by this group that just bought the masters, and they wanted to kind of work something out with her so she could get them back at some point. And what's written into the language right now is that Scooter still gets something, even though he sold them off to Ithaca. So she said, nope, I'm not doing that. And I think that there was also a non-disclosure agreement that needed to be signed. And she said, I'm not doing that, which, good for her.
Yeah, I mean, she's just stiff-arming him and doesn't want anything to do with it. And I guess good for Scooter, too. I mean, he's getting a dividend. I don't know what it is. He wins, certainly, too.
Yep. Yeah, he's made some good money off of just that. Not to mention his other things, so.
Yeah, and that's probably why she walked away. She was probably like, oh, no matter what, you get some cut of this, and that's just, you know, burned bridges. That just sounds evil no matter what if you're on the opposing side. So
that was an interesting story to us. We definitely thought that there was some meat on that bone, especially musically, just kind of overarching themes, that stuff we've talked about in the past. So
yeah, and you'll see more of this where people recognize the value of their masters, which is why artists are trying to recoup them. And obviously, this showcases how valuable they can possibly be. I mean, this is a massive number in wild times, especially in the streaming era.
Well, we talked about that a couple weeks back, right? When we did our kind of state of the music industry, and how having that back catalog and that evergreen and maybe repressing or pressing something was big. Something else we talked about a couple weeks ago was live events and how are we going to get back to those. And Ticketmaster wanting to have a vaccine or not a vaccine, a negative COVID test to get people in the door, right? That was an interesting thing that we saw this week, too.
We kind of saw this coming, right? I mean, if you are going to have live music in this climate, something's got to give. Either people in a bubble, people socially distance, or proof that you don't have the virus, right?
Yep.
And Nate, what would you pick out of those?
I don't even know. I mean, the whole thing is just a head trip, right? But it all stems from liability when you think about it. Like, they're just taking every precaution. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very overreaching, like, ah, oh, man, I have to give you my medical history now. You know, this has becomes almost like a, it's supposed to be a patient doctor, you know, privilege type thing. And now it's open source for everyone. So
yeah, Live Nation has it. Great.
Yeah. So it gets really complex emotionally. I'm not sure what I would do. I think the hazmat suit. I think we agreed on that one a little while ago.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Or the bubble, the Flaming Lips bubble. Yeah. But yeah, their Live Nation's main competition is AXS, and they said that they flat out said we shouldn't have that information. That's not really for us to own or have be privy to. And I agree with them. I'm not really feeling Ticketmaster knowing every little thing about me and when I got my test, where it was given to me, you know, all, if positive, negative, etc. So I don't want them in on my medical care. I don't want them in my pocket, and they're in my pocket anyway.
But I got a question. So AXS, they've said that from like an ethical perspective, or just they don't want to get in the business of that. I think that's what I read, that we don't want to be in the business of that. Are they like, what's their whole angle? Are they accepting that we just won't have shows, or they want to come up with have they offered their solution, like what their creative solution is to it?
That's a good question. And I think you made it sound more accurate. They don't want to be in the business of that. Because having that information becomes a situation where now you've got to really maybe up your security a little more on your servers, and you don't want that stuff out there, and that's going to cost them more money too. So it doesn't make sense for them to have all that info. So I'm not sure if they have a full-on solution to this problem yet. I know the NBA is supposed to start in about 5 weeks, and they want fans, right? They need to have fans back to be as viable as they can be. The money they've been making and the salaries that they have for guys going out. Golden State Warriors in California, in Nate's neck of the woods, sort of, a little further north, they said that they were going to throw $30 million of their own dollars into the mix to get people tested prior to coming to a game. Not necessarily in the moment, but a couple days out, 72 to 24 hours out, I would imagine. So, and San Francisco said no. City of San Francisco was like, we can't do that. But they're thinking that's outside the box stuff, right?
Yeah, and that's big spend. That's definitely Bay Area money. I mean, to pony that up. I mean, and the fact that the city shut it down is too bad, but progressive, but also wealthy. Someone's got to do it. I mean, there's going to be two sides of it. And I think when you mentioned, Tuan, what's the opposing argument or what's the solution? It almost becomes a little political. There's going to be maybe two or three options on how live music is going to come back. So maybe some people are holding out. Maybe other people have different business plans in the works. It's obviously complicated if Live Nation Ticketmaster owns their venues. Those become somewhat a monopoly within that, or duopoly. Yeah, I think it might be a waiting game just to kind of have multiple solutions so it doesn't become a full-on, you know, anti-concert anarchy type scenario.
It did sound like, what, 6 months of the smaller groups in bigger venues might be a situation. Yeah. So there'll be some live music, I think, you know, at the break of the year after we get through the holidays and the cold weather kind of starts to dissipate. I bet we start seeing some bigger venues, especially outdoors, hold concerts with limited capacity more than we're seeing now.
If this doesn't highlight how much money is up for grabs in both the music industry and sports, it's like, I know 30 million, I don't know, what's the Warriors payroll? 120, dude. 150 million or whatever?
Yeah, probably somewhere I mean, in that vicinity.
They're basically saying, hey, I'm willing to spend a 20% luxury tax to get half the people in the building. I mean, that just shows you. But you're right. It's Bay Area money, and it's a little tilted, I guess, just given the money in that area and their willingness to spend. But my goodness, are you kidding me?
Tangent off that, and this is a sports nerdery situation, but didn't they just open that new stadium out there too? So like, they need to get people in that stadium. It's state of the art. It cost a shit ton of money, I'm sure, and they're fucking empty.
And they sucked last year, and Klay Thompson's hurt again. So I don't know who. That's a Silicon Valley money. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, sports nerdery. Yeah. But it feeds into the music thing, right? I mean, because that's a venue that they're big enough, they're going to have concerts too when they're not playing basketball in there. It makes sense that you find a way to get people into that building no matter how it is, whether it's a basketball game, whether it's a circus for the kids, Disney on Ice, big concert, right?
Yeah, and that's going to be the place that's going to go first too, I think, is the Bay Area, because all the businesses that are funneling into this new technology are, you know, Bay Area tech companies. So they're so ancillary to something like this opening ASAP. And if it's within vicinity of the business, said business, then, you know, they'll throw money at it. There's probably all sorts of deals going down right now, you know?
I mean, look at the name of the arena, or the old arena was Oracle. I mean,
exactly.
Larry Ellison's probably fronting the 30 milli.
Yeah, right. I mean,
this whole story is interesting because in one camp, you got this one big player that's saying, yes, test people, get in. On the other end, you get AXS that says no, and it's just like you would think they would align to kind of like a rising tide lifts all ships, where they'd get inch closer. But hey, maybe there's actually ethics in this business and morals. I don't know.
There's some, yeah. There's some, and I'm not going to get political, but isn't it kind of indicative of where our country is at this moment, right? Like, there's a lot of people that feel one way about something, and there's a lot of people that feel the other way about something, and they're always at odds. And it really doesn't matter if it's politics, if it's sports, if it's music, you're going to have an argument. And that's kind of where we're at right now as a country. And it's unfortunate. We should be pulling towards the same thing, not against each other, but hey, shit happens, right?
Yeah. Well, it's easier to digest when it's a brand or a company. It's like, there's always going to be a Pepsi and a Coca-Cola, you know? So if there's going to be ASX and Ticketmaster, then okay. But yeah, it gets a little political and a little, we're better, we're more ethical. I'll always choose more ethical at the end of the day. So,
I'd like to think I would too, yeah.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola wants you to wear a mask and Pepsi says no mask.
Yeah.
Pepsi, are you anti-mask? Holy shit. Twan, breaking news.
Anti-mask and anti-vax.
No soft drinks were harmed in the taping of this podcast.
It's like the fast food, right? The Wendy's Instagram or Twitter.
Yeah, we love those guys.
The trolling.
Yeah. Give me a McGriddle any day, bro. All right. Do we want to? I don't have a segue for it, but do we want to jump into the main segment?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, no segue for the segment that we don't have a name for.
Yeah, we came up with all kinds of stuff that just didn't fit.
It's like the Rubik's Cube of, you know, how, what is it? I don't know.
I was going to say to the listeners, if you can think of a name, let us know. But obviously this will be out long before you let us know.
Well, this was sort of listener supported. Chip emailed us a while back during, I think the mailbag episode around that time. And he said, you know, how many bands hit album 5 and that's their best work, or even get to album 5 before they break up or bad things happen. So this, we were like, let's take that and kind of run with it a little bit and see what we can do. So shouts to you, Chip.
Yeah, totally. And just to, as a refresher, the segment is we're going to each pick a band that had their best album as the first album, their best album as their second album, third, fourth, and fifth, et cetera, et cetera. One thought as I was putting all this together for my picks was a lot of bands that I love never even got to 3 or 4 or forget about 5, 1.
Yep.
And then the second thought is, once I get to 4 and 5, I'm like, this is fucking hard. This is hard to do, because we always talk about how a band has their lifetime to make their first album. So they have all this creative energy for the first album. And then the second album is typically label rushed, or, you know what I mean? It's within a couple of years. So to strike gold on 2 and then 3 and 4 is pretty wild.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and even like, so say maybe they have a really great first album, get signed, and then it's like, okay, here, do this, change, be this way. You know, label pressure comes in, which we talked about that last week with Ben from Chronic Future. He didn't have that. They didn't have that with Lions in My Face, and I think it showed as to why that album was as good as it was. So, but it definitely happens, and it turns into, okay, album 1 was really good, or maybe album 1 and 2 were really good, and 2 was their best, and then they were signed. And then it went, you know, off the deep end. So it does get tough to get to that 4, 5, 6 range.
Yeah. There's so many elements too, because it's like, are those first 3 albums all indie records, but they're still like an indie label? It's still a legit label. And then 4 or 5 are major label, something like that.
Ooh,
so
yeah.
A lot of variables.
You're getting into maybe a couple of months.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to lead up? And you want to go first one?
Do it. I'll go first. I won't drag it out like someone on this podcast named Nate.
90s OG.
So the first one is, this is the band's debut full length, obviously, and it's Citizen Youth.
Nice.
It's their first album. They put out Young States before this, just an EP. That I guess I'd call it an album. That EP is awesome. But Youth is like, I always like, in my mind, this is like the album that Brand New should have made between Deja and Devil and God, or maybe after Devil and God. It's like, I don't know. It's not on that level, I guess, but it's as close as you're going to get to that era of Brand New, and it's just really good.
Agreed. You turned me onto them. That's an awesome record, and they're an awesome band. Band I never would have known without Twan. So, yeah, I agree. That's a good first pick. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was just at the brewery, right? Took a picture of my coworker with the Citizen shirt.
Nice.
Yeah, some love over here
too. You did? Yeah, I remember that. That was a couple days ago.
Yeah, there's a song off this album called "Your Head Got Misplaced." That is a total Deja, Devil and God B-side. It is. Listen to that. If you're listening, go check out the song "Your Head Got Misplaced" by Citizen. If you like Brand New, you'll fucking love it.
They played Port City, rest in peace, Port City, and I didn't go, and I almost did, and it was this. Here we go, show regret, right? That was a situation where I just didn't. I really wanted to go. It was late spring. I think I was at the end of my rope with where I was at work-wise, which only because it was a busy year, not because I don't like my job. I love my job, but it was busy, and it was the end of May or something, and I just couldn't make it work. I was just fried.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Massive show, great.
Yeah, it was 2018.
Yep.
But yeah, this takes the cake over the album following this, and then As You Please, which is their last album. Great album, but just, I don't think it touches Youth.
I would agree.
So who's next? I figure we'll go like that level of
Yeah,
depth.
That's perfect. Yeah. Well, we've got 15 albums that plus to go through, so yeah. Whew, hey, do you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go. All right, so mine is kind of an off-the-chart one for what I was going to pick for a debut. Yeah, but it came out when we graduated high school. It was Story of the Year, Page Avenue.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
For this album, for a debut album, rips front to back. It's like a sing-along album. And obviously, they had five albums total. But this one just it takes the cake. Yeah. Produced by John Feldman of Goldfinger.
What was their original name? Something Monkey? Something
Blue Monkey or something stupid?
Yeah, Blue Monkey.
Something really dumb. Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
Well, they opened for, we've talked about this before, I think, but if you're new to Patio Slave in the last couple of weeks, we've talked about seeing these guys open around this time, right? 99, 2000, 2001, for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, small, big, didn't matter. They were an opening act for so many bands back then before Until the Day I Die hit, and then they headlined a little bit in club shows. So they, we saw them as Blue Monkey. We saw them as Story of the Year. They were opening for, I don't know, bands like Linkin Park and POD, and then they were playing their own show at the State Theater here in Portland, which is, you know, 1,800 people cap.
Were they part of that Thrice Thursday show? No.
I don't know.
It was The Used, Thrice, and My Chemical Romance, Story
which
of the
I
Year opened.
Yeah, that's a band that I was at that show. All right, am I up?
Yep.
I got one that, this is 90s OG, Dave. This is right up your alley.
Nice.
We met this band on a meet and greet at the State Theater before you moved, and we also hung out outside hoping to catch the lead singer's at the time wife. You know who I'm talking about?
Is it Bush?
Bush.
It's Bush, bro. 16 Stone.
Yeah, totally.
Nice.
Their first album. That is easily their best album, right? Not even close.
I think Nate's a Razorblade Suitcase truther.
I love what's it? Golden State.
Yep, that's the last album, right? The last album.
That one was like, that one's back there a little bit, but yeah. It's
what's
not,
the science one? Wasn't there a science one?
It's the
science of things.
Yes, that's it. And it has like the chemicals between us, which is a good song, but it's not. I mean, it's nothing touches, everything zen and Come Down and Glycerine. And I mean, that was just a singles monster, Machine Head. There were so many big songs off that record. And I mean, it's easily, for me, their first album is their best album.
I would agree. Totally agree. You're right. When I think of 90s OG, when I think of a 90s rock band, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing that. Do you remember getting the flyers in the Sunday paper for like Leechmere, Best Buy and stuff?
Yep.
I remember the flyer had like this album for like $7.99 or $9.99.
Yeah,
it was
nice.
Like a bargain, which is what, 94? I don't know.
Yeah, it came out in 94.
Yeah.
I had it on cassette. That that tells you anything. I had also had it on CD.
Wait, what's a cassette?
But exactly. I was 10. I was big into Bush. I was big into Red Hot Chili Peppers. I was big into the Smashing Pumpkins. So
great taste.
That is 90s OG. That's a great era.
OG.
What do you say, 94? 94?
Yeah, 94.
Yeah, that was a great year.
All right, Twan, what is your favorite, or not favorite, I guess it would be second album is their best.
Favorite sophomore album.
Yeah, sophomore album.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my favorite song. This is an artist whose best album is their second, their second album. So I'm going to switch genres a little bit. We haven't really talked about this genre a whole hell of a lot, but I'm going to go with my favorite MC, Mr. Nas. It Was Written.
Nice.
It Was Written.
Nice.
Nice. It Was Written. I'll take it to the bank. It's better than Illmatic. It a lot of it has to do with when I heard it. Obviously, I heard that before I heard Illmatic, so I'm like 11 years old. Seeing it, and we talked about this early on, like what, episode 2 or 3, where I remember seeing If I Ruled the World on MTV. Yeah, I do recognize the legacy of Illmatic, but when you open your album with what, The Message and Street Dreams, mm-hmm. I'm like, come on, are you kidding
That's
me?
That's enough right there. Yeah,
that's enough. Yep. And then near the end of the album is If I Ruled the World. It's like
Lauryn Hill, right?
Lauryn Hill, it's as good as it gets.
When did that
so
come
good.
Out?
96.
Okay, yep.
Because Illmatic was 94.
It's better than Nostradamus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which wasn't bad. I mean, but
No. There's still some. He's not. He's still fucking great, but.
This album flow is so good on It Was Written. And like you said, The Message. Actually, The Message was the first song I ever heard from Nas. And I was like, this guy's the man. It's good flow. Very, like, much a vibe. And what's that song that's all about the perspective of a handgun?
Are you thinking of One Mic?
Nope.
No?
What is that called?
I'd have to listen back.
You know what I'm talking about, Tone?
I don't.
The whole time he's like, oh, shit. He's talking about the whole perspective of the lyrics are a handgun, like just being tossed around New York City. It's crazy.
I mean, that's right up Nas's alley, right?
Right? It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's crazy to think about, like, that's what we grew up on. Like, and then this generation now has like Bad and Bougie. Like, that's, you know what I mean? It's just a whole different level of artistry and lyricism. But at the same time, I do like Migos, so I don't know. Joke's on me, I guess.
I'm going to ride for 90s hip-hop all fucking day. The Nas's and the Biggies and the Tupacs and the listening to this 36-year-old white guy from Maine. But I fucking love that shit, man. I grew up with that shit.
The song I was talking about is I Gave You Power.
Oh, I Gave You Power. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I was probably too young to realize what it was about, and I haven't.
Well, that was a later revelation. That was a later revelation. I heard it and like, wow, this whole thing is coming from the perspective of the handgun. Just really crazy.
Yep. He would do that though. He was always doing stuff like that, which is why what sets him apart. I think he's willing to take risks and chances and not just do your regular, hey, look at how much money I have. Hey, look at my car. Hey, look at my women. Like
he
did way more than that. He was a lot deeper.
Nate, what you got? Second album.
Second album is also, I'm kind of switching up the genres a little bit. Modest Mouse. The Lonesome Crowded West. I don't know if you guys have heard this record.
I don't know this one. I don't think.
This is the obscure Modest Mouse record that like was two albums like super indie, you know, two albums back from their kind of huge success. And like if you knew about them, you were cool. You know, it's like this indie thing. And the first song on it, it just kind of goes right into it. It's almost like this like garage rock song. And I remember hearing it just being like, what the hell is this shit? But it was freaking awesome. And then when I found out other people that liked it, they were always like, it's almost like an inside thing. Like, yeah, if you know about Modest Mouse, like keep it on the low.
Yep. I obviously came to them when they got big commercially with Dashboard was the really big song. And what was the other one? Float On were huge. So I've never actually gone back and listened to this. And this is now something that you saying it makes me want to go back and listen to it because I loved those other songs. I just never. I remember reading something funny about Modest Mouse. Everybody gets into them with the album that they heard and they think that's their best one, which is kind of cool. And that happens with a lot of artists I know, but they were like, go back an album and you're going to be floored at how much different it is and like it because of how good they are. So that was kind of cool. And it makes me want to revisit a little bit more than I have.
Oh yeah. I have a 7-inch record of theirs, I think from this era. I'll have to dig it up. But they were like the original, well, not the original, but one of like the early college rock bands. You know what I mean? College radio rock bands. And the Modest Mouse you got on, what, Good News for People Who Love Bad News? That's Float On album. Totally different. I haven't heard this album specifically, but I've probably heard a couple of the songs off it from the 7-inch record I have. But, oh, yeah, they're one of those bands that it's like, out of all the bands of their ilk, how did they get the biggest? Because they, I don't know. I mean, I think they're deserving, but it just makes you think. Because this came out in, what, 97?
Yeah.
Crazy. I got to revisit it. I'm with you, Tone. I don't know it, but I'm sure I'll like it.
Yeah, and that's the best thing about this exercises like this and us bringing our own flavor to this. Because I think my best second album is going to, I could go ways that would make sense to you guys. I'm going to pick one that I'm not sure you guys are super familiar with.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
That's my segue. You ready for
it? Is that
your
segue? Ooh, it's the segue king this week.
You guys familiar with the band Cunning Linguists?
No.
Sounds hip-hop-ish? I don't know.
They are underground hip-hop, yep. And their sophomore album, 2003's Southern Underground, is a underground classic of a fucking hip-hop record. It is so damn good. It just jumps on you and doesn't get let up, and it's just a great, great lyricism, great beats, great production. It is badass. Southern Underground. That's my their sophomore album is their best album for me. Cunnilingus with Southern Underground.
Where are they from geographically? Is it from the South?
I believe so.
In 2003, because I'm trying to like in my head equate them to an artist that I know, and I'm not sure where to go.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, right on.
Oh, wow. And it was in 03, you said?
Yeah. They touch with some other artists that you've heard of. I know they've got a cool song with Slug from Atmosphere. They've got some other times. Master Ace. You familiar with Master Ace at all?
Just by name.
Yeah. So there's definitely some people there that you've heard and some voices that you probably heard. So I would totally check this record out front to back. Just awesome. Great early 2000s hip hop.
Just given the year, I know that it's probably good. That was like such a sweet spot for
backpack
underground hip hop. Like.
Backpack rap. That was the start of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One of my other ones was also not the same sound, but underground hip hop from that time frame, which I'll save for another day.
Oh, nice. This is a repeatable segment for sure.
Oh yeah, dude, I got a bunch of albums sitting here, but yeah, that's one I'm excited. I'm not even sure what song I would pick to put on the playlist, so I'm gonna have some head scratching to do. But I would tell you guys, don't listen to just that song. Go back and peep that whole album because it's fire.
Oh, it's awesome. I need new music too. That's perfect.
High energy, Nate. You'll like it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of where I would have seen it, if it's like on the recommended, if you like, on Spotify, or if like an old tour poster or something.
Yeah. Mm. They, it's, I mean, it's obviously a play on words, their name. So not to get too graphic here, but yeah, it also works as far as what they are. They are cunning linguists. All right. I'll leave the rest of that alone. Twan, what's your next one?
All right. So we're into bands whose third album is their best. So if we kind of like back up to the intro to the episode, this is when I feel like industry interband dynamics can maybe come in. And I have a few here that I'm going to pick from, but I'm going to pick one that kind of feeds into that. So I'm going to go with Thrice, Artist in the Ambulance.
Nice.
Nice.
And so you got to figure what Identity Crisis was on Subcity. And then what was the one after that?
Illusion of Safety.
Was it Subcity record? Yeah, I think it was Subcity. And then this comes out on what, Island?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were on Island for a couple albums, I think, right? One or two.
So major label debut, more formal song structure. The crazy thing about this album, I think it's arguably their heaviest. I mean, there's heavy elements on Illusion of Safety with like To Awaken and Avenge the Dead, but Paper Tigers, Abolition of Man, I mean, are you kidding? And this... they lost me a little bit after this with like Visu and then the Indexes. And then they came back with that album in 2016, which is great.
Ooh, no, before that, they did Beggars after the Indexes.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm just thinking of ones that I liked. I liked one in 16.
You didn't like Beggars?
No, it's a little too slow for me. I don't know.
See, I think Beggars is their best album.
Really?
So I'm disagreeing
with
you.
Yeah, Beggars.
It's a little... oh my God, it's a little bluesy. It's not as heavy as this album. And I mean, knowing you, I understand why this would be your favorite, because
totally.
It is awesome. And I love this album. It's the album that got me onto them.
Yeah.
But I loved that they didn't stay here. They moved to different things for each album. Like Visu is a little more creative, a little more out there. The Alchemy Index is four EPs essentially, and it's all over the map. There's some heavy, there's some soft, there's some digital sounding. And then Beggars, I think, is really bluesy, and I don't know, I kind of liked that more, but for me.
Yeah.
But I love this band. I fucking love this band.
We could do a whole Thrice episode, because I'm a huge Major Minor fan.
Yeah, Major Minor's great too. Yep.
I fucking love that album. So, but yeah, this was the album that got me into Thrice too. And I think the energy and kind of the time and place for the band in this album, I think it was like a perfect storm.
Yeah, totally. And it does have the major label polish. It's got the singles, it's got, you know, All That's Left and Stare at the Sun and and whatnot. But it just, I don't know, it's got better song structure. If you listen back to Illusion of Safety and Identity Crisis, the production fucking sucks on those. It's so bad, especially in Identity Crisis. And I don't think they like it. If you listen to interviews, they're like almost embarrassed, I think.
They're just sick of people asking them to play Deadbolt.
right? man. But yeah, Artist in the Ambulance, favorite Thrice album. Nate's next.
And it's their third, right? It's their third album. So that you think it's their best work, it's their third album.
Yes.
That's their third.
Yep.
Whew.
All right, Nate, what do you got? Third album, best one.
Third album. It's a big ask. It's also a loaded question. The Fragile by Nine Inch Nails is maybe my favorite third album of any band, which is, that's a bold statement because that takes a lot of research.
I'm going to stop you for a second. So first is Pretty Hate Machine, right?
Yep.
Two is Broken.
Yep.
Three is The Downward Spiral, not The Fragile.
Oh, no, because Broken is an EP.
Okay. We're not doing EPs, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Broken being an EP, this does work. A full length, it's a double album too, so even better.
No, good to fact check. I like it, especially on air.
Just making sure I had it right in my head. I'm like, I feel like you missed Broken, but okay.
No. Yeah, no, not counting EPs. I guess we could.
I didn't count EPs.
No, we're not counting EPs. Yeah. Full lengths. Full length.
I was going to say that could get complicated with that Thrice being four. Yeah, so that's an album. But yeah, I mean, this album is the first album that I heard about Nine Inch Nails. I think I maybe heard the older stuff, but it was so casual, you know, where you're just like, I don't really get it. It was that, I mean, I had that stereotypical, I don't know what this gothic Nine Inch Nails band thing is. I probably wouldn't dig it. And then I finally heard it and heard this album. And I was like, okay, I totally get it. And I totally understand. And it's extremely complicated and emotional and loud and complicated music, but I really like it. And no other album that they've put out, and it's not a diss, right? But this album just takes the cake for Nine Inch Nails.
Heavy Therapy to the max, which is calls back to our episode in the teens there, 16 maybe, going off of, you know, you want to put something on to just kind of be cathartic and get it out. This is it.
And this is like, I think we kind of hinted at this, but like, this is like impressive territory for a band to, on their third output, you know what I mean? Because it's like, how much time between this and Downward Spiral was there?
3 or 4 years.
Okay, then that makes sense.
And it's 10 years from the first album. So 88, 89, I think 89 for Pretty Hate Machine. So.
Maybe it's not a good example of that statement, but like a lot of times it's like, you just finished touring off the last album. Yeah, go create something new. Get back in the studio. And it's often rushed and genres change and fans' taste change and you try to chase that. And I don't, this is, that album's like the antithesis of that, but you know what I mean?
Yep.
Totally. And I think it was a time for Trent where he had enough kind of pull within the industry. He kind of earned his stripes and had the, you know, financial capacity from the label to put something out that was his true genius, you know? So he couldn't really do it on those early albums. So for this to be the third album as the best, it kind of makes sense. It was like a build up to this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like a concept album too, right? It's a double album. So it's a masterpiece. And I couldn't think of any other band's best album being their third other than Nine Inch Nails Fragile. It just kept coming. I actually crossed it out like 8 times. I'm like, I don't want to do this one. But it's so good. So
I left it off because I agree. And I didn't want to do it as well because I agree with you. And I was like, one of us is going to end up doing this. So I'm going to leave it off.
That's exactly why I didn't want to do it. Yeah. But it deserves the attention. It's so good.
Yeah,
what do you got, Tim?
All right. So I'm gonna throw a curveball here a little bit.
Oh, you made a last minute adjustment here?
No, I got two that we haven't talked a ton about, and I know we like both of these. One might be a little bit of a blind spot for Tuan, but we like the other album for sure. I'm gonna
do the blind spot for me.
Blind spot, Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run.
Yeah, total blind spot.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Third album, Thunder Road, 10th Avenue Freeze Out, Backstreets, Born to Run, She's the One, Jungle Land. It's eight songs long. It's 39 minutes. It's perfect.
Eight like, it songs. Just does, that's it.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Born to Run.
Yeah.
You've heard Born to Run a million times. You probably heard Thunder Road a million times.
I mean, talk about iconic CD cover for Born to Run.
Oh, that too. Yeah. And you know, it's just I saw Bruce in 2008 with my dad. I bought him tickets for his birthday. He had never seen him. I don't think I've ever seen him happier. So it's one of those things for me that it's just like my dad kind of got me into music as a young kid and I got to pay it forward, bring him to see the Boss at Gillette Stadium on the field. And they played 10th Avenue Freeze Out, which was his favorite Boss song. So, and you know, another story for another time, one of my favorite concert experiences for a different reason, which I'll go to when we get to that point. But yeah. Born to Run, third album by Bruce, best album he's ever made. And he's made a lot of really, really good albums.
1975. Damn.
Yeah.
So you know this one, Nate?
Yeah, and I agree. The cover, when you said that, the cover really is timeless. It looks like that could come out today if he was younger, obviously, right? It just looks like a snapshot of simplicity in itself. But yeah, I remember this album, man. And I actually got me into Bruce Springsteen too, just like listening to this album first. And no strong connections to the actual album itself, really, but just the album that got me into Bruce as an artist. And his story, you know, is just heartwarming. So when you're talking about your dad's favorite band, like Bruce is like old school, not OG. He's old school, right?
Right.
So.
Well, he's the OG of OGs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
70s OG.
Prolific and, you know, put out the live show is three and a half hours and he's just a madman on stage. He was when I saw him. It was 12 years ago, but he was just a madman on stage at 62 or whatever. And it was just like, this guy is awesome. Like, no shit that people have loved this guy for 40 plus, 50 plus years, whatever it is.
Yeah. And when he talks, he's like a modern day Elvis. You know what I mean? It's a freaking legend.
I'd say he's better than Elvis, but that's just me.
Oof.
Yeah. Elvis did help with the proliferation of rock and roll in America. He didn't make it up. I know there was Chuck Berry and all that stuff beforehand, but yeah.
Total blind spot for me. It's interesting. The album I probably know the most of his was the post 9/11 album,
mm-hmm. The Rising.
The Rising.
Yep.
Great record. Another great. I mean, that could you could argue that's his best work because of the context and how it was received and how big it was. I mean, but this is the one that really put him over the top. He was already making hay and being a really good, you know, live performer and putting out good music. And then this album was just like perfect. And it's still, I mean, iconic to this day.
My wife loves the song Radio Nowhere. I don't even know what album that's on.
Magic, I
that's,
believe.
That's a more recent one.
Oh, wow.
It's like a Gaslight Anthem.
2006,
like,
maybe? Yeah, yep.
Sounds like Gaslight Anthem. Which...
Fact check me. Someone fact check me.
I think it was that album. That was after like another hiatus they had, right? With the East
Magic's Street a Chan. Great record. And it's funny. You say Gaslight Anthem, Tuan. There are so many people in the early to mid 2000s. I mean, before that too, but stuff that we kind of grew up with listening to and hit the radio and we were kind of formative with, like the Gaslight Anthem that took from Bruce whole
totally.
Cloth. They were just Bruce knockoffs. Not that they did it poorly or differently or whatever, but I'm not knocking those bands, but they definitely were. They took a lot of inspiration from Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, and Gaslight, they've gotten that like their whole career. And they've opened for him too.
Yep. And cool. I mean, that's awesome.
That's fucking amazing.
Yeah. Fallon's probably like, yes, this is exactly what I was hoping for when I started doing this. All right. We up to four. Want to do four?
Yep.
All right. So band whose fourth album is their best. And this actually kind of fits into the thrice situation where this album is the band's major label debut. Came out in, I want to say, 2003, and that's the Atari's So Long Astoria.
Great record.
Yeah. Wow. It's so their debut was Anywhere But Here. Great album. Blue Skies, Blue Hearts, End of the World, whatever it is. Or Next Exit, what I forget what it was. And then End Is Forever. Blue Skies is phenomenal. Great album. Yep. In fact, they re-recorded at least one song from that album on So Long. But yeah, So Long has the major label polish. It's got the cover, Boys of Summer. You know what I mean? It's geared for the radio, but forget forget that stuff. It's a great album. Like, they introduced some piano on some of the tracks. Songwriting's great. Major label gloss. But it still has that little edge to it, too. You know, that punk edge. And it's less punk, but I fucking love this record. I wish they would, in 2023, I think it's Chris Rowe, the singer. I think he's the only original member. He better tour off this album.
Agreed. And it's funny that you didn't mention this, knowing you and maybe knowing that I might. The whole Goonies vibe.
Oh, yeah,
bro.
The Goonies vibe. Yeah. I mean, that's my, I would probably say pound for pound, even as a 35-year-old, it's probably my favorite movie of all time.
It's one of the best movies ever.
And yeah, you're right. How the fuck didn't I mention?
So long, Astoria, found a map to buried treasure. Yes, yeah. Let's go.
This is my wish. I'm taking it back. Yeah. I'm taking them all back. Yeah, I mean.
It's so good.
I'm going to throw this on tomorrow. I'm going to just, I have tomorrow off. I'm going to run some errands and just rock out to this album because I fucking love it still.
We should make the playlist all 15 albums. No, that's a great choice. That album's killer.
And they only put one other album after this, full length.
Twan, do you say this is a mood booster album?
No, because there's like that song that's about his daughter. It's like really sad. Saddest song it's called. Then there's like Unopened Letter to the World, which I don't know. But some of the songs, yes. Maybe the first half of this album.
I was going to say, it's not, maybe not the lyrical content, but the vibe of the album's very like upbeat, fast-paced.
Most of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And like you're thinking Boys of Summer too, Nate. I mean, that is a great cover. Right? They did it justice as far as great a song as that is to begin with, Don Henley's Boys of Summer. So really, really cool cover.
Black flag sticker on a Cadillac.
Yeah, as opposed to a Deadhead. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, obviously that song was huge, and half the audience obviously didn't know who or what Black Flag was, so that was kind of cool.
Well, and they probably didn't know who Don Henley or the Eagles were, too. Like, you're hitting that. We did, maybe, because we're music nerds at age, 17, 18 when that came out. But most probably people our age, or a decent amount of people our age, didn't, and younger definitely didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a soft spot for this album. I spinned the hell out of this growing up. And I love Blue Skies, too. And the other two albums were decent. I never heard the album after this. But this definitely, it takes the cake.
Tangent, what was the big song on Blue Skies? Not Your Girlfriend Sucks. Was it Your Girlfriend Sucks?
I Won't Spend Another Night Alone.
Yeah.
I Think Your Girlfriend Sucks. Yep.
Yeah. Is that the one where like they start with like the, from the movie, they're talking about reaching over and unlocking the door?
Oh, my God. You're like bringing me back, man. Oh, my.
Yeah, dude.
Dude, that. Yeah, it opens with Losing Streak. Oh, and San Dimas High School Football Rules.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Your Boyfriend Sucks. Do you guys remember the song The Radio Still Sucks by them?
Yeah. No.
The opening lyrics are like, I'm really fucking sick of Beck and 311 and Marilyn Manson.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's awesome. That's actually awesome.
Just ripping on radio, and then they became what they fucking...
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens, right? man. All right, Nate, fourth album, Nate. Fourth album that you think a band is their fourth album is their best work.
Yep. And this is a hot take too. Tony, you may have thoughts.
I not have thoughts ever? I mean, come on.
You always have thoughts.
Pause your thoughts.
It's a wonder I have friends, period, honestly.
Atmosphere. You can't imagine how much fun we're having. Their best album, four albums in. Albums leading up to this are fire too. Especially Seven's Travels, right? I mean, it's like, it's that perfect crossover. But this one's even above that. It's not quite mainstream rap. It's not underground. It's kind of like in this perfect sweet spot. And they were like at a perfect prime too.
Tone, crushes dreams, Tone. Come
no,
on.
No, no, no. Okay, so I don't disagree, but I also disagree.
Interesting.
God Loves Ugly, their second album, I think is their best album. Now, they have gone through many iterations as a twosome, to the point where like they put a couple albums out in the mid to late 2000s that were with a full band all over the map. One of, for a very short, probably a 10-year period, was my favorite group, bar none, with anything. I saw them maybe, I think I've seen them 12 times. Yeah, no, you can't imagine, it's an awesome, awesome record. And there's some just badass songs on there. I guess it would depend on my mood.
Yeah, that's good.
I love God Loves Ugly, but it would depend on my mood.
That's a good way to put it, as tied with like not the best fourth, But you're saying it's not the best fourth, though. It's the best fourth album, but you're saying the best album's the second.
Yeah. The cool thing here is I think 2-3-4 as a run for them is a great, great three-album run from God Loves Ugly to Seven's Travels to... Actually, no. Is Lucy Ford in there? No, Lucy Ford was before God Loves Ugly. So, yeah, God Loves Ugly, Seven's Travels, and You Can't Imagine. And You Can't Imagine, it's funny, You Can't Imagine has a major label feel to it.
I was going
to
ask if this was major, but it was on Rhymesayers,
right? No, it's them. Yeah, it's them. It's their record label, which they've gotten into. Rhymesayers has gotten into some hot water in the this calendar year with some stuff that's gone on there that I'm not going to pretend to know all of and not going to pass a ton of judgment on, but they've worked on making things better for people in the scene out in Minneapolis. But I mean, this band's been around a long time. I've grown up with them, love the music. It's one of those art artist things. I have so much goodwill towards the times that I've spent seeing this band. So yeah, it's a great record, Nate. I don't disagree with you. It's a great record.
The CD cover screams major with them in the chairs. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
I think the production does too. And it's not a major, which is, they just got really good at what they're doing.
Yeah, and it plays through nicely, like a major kind of fluid album.
Yep.
But,
favorite track, Nate?
Favorite track?
In that record, yeah. I got to ask. Is it Little Man?
Yeah, I
think so. Little Man's so good. The closer.
Yeah, it's so good. Yep. It just really paints the whole story.
I would have said, for me, Pour Me Another when it first came out. But now it's probably Little Man. As you get older, things change. Or Angel Face. Or Smart Went Crazy. Shit, man, the whole thing's good.
Smart Went Crazy is dope, yeah.
all right, that's a good one. That's a good one, dude. I like that.
What you got, Tone?
We've got a lot of hip-hop flavor on this, and I'm going to keep the train rolling. Outkast. Nice. Outkast, baby, Stankonia. Fourth record.
Oh, nice.
Best record. Not even close. 20-year anniversary a couple weeks ago. You guys obviously are into this and knew this, right?
Oh, totally.
Jackson and Bombs Over Baghdad. Is there anything, I mean... Could any other band, any other rap group pull off Bombs Over Baghdad?
No.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
No, so I'm trying to think. So I had this album in the moment, but it was a burned CD.
Probably from when we swapped CD booklets?
No, this was a download.
Oh, nice.
This was a download burned CD type of thing. But yeah, I'm cross-checking in real time here. Is it better than Southern Playlist to Cadillac Music? Yes.
Yes.
Better than Atlians? Yes. Better than...
Aquemini,
yeah, it
is. Starting to fight. You're starting to fight a little bit.
Yeah,
there,
you're
though.
Starting
like
to.
Somebody,
you're
yeah.
starting to scrap a little bit. it's better than Speaker Box and Idlewild. you know,
yeah,
like
exactly. So
it is.
It's it. I think.
Yeah, it's tough. AT Aliens is pretty amazing, but yeah, Stankonia is just so good. I almost chose this album. So
did you
I'm
really?
You. I'm happy I crossed this off. Yeah, but it's fucking such a good album.
It's so good.
If you do listen back to like Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music, the flows that they have on that album, they don't come back to like really. I guess I'm trying to say like each album's different.
Yeah. Well, but, they were definitely like that.
But Stankonia is just like another level of artistry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And obviously it was a double CD? Was it?
No, that was Speaker Box Love Below.
Oh, that's right.
Where
that's
like
right.
Andre got his own CD, but they both were on it and Big Boy got his. That was kind of the beginning of the end for them. Not that they're not friends. They just beginning of the end of Outkast as we knew it. I've heard Killer Mike say this because he actually, The Whole World, which is an Outkast featuring Killer Mike song, is my favorite, one of my favorite rap lines of all time. It's a Killer Mike line. He says they put Atlanta music on the map. So, you know, mid-90s, they shone a light on how Atlanta can do it. And Atlanta's huge now as far as the culture goes and hip-hop and even TV with the TV show, Donald Glover's TV show.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yep. But yeah, Gasoline Dreams. Like
yeah, to open.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
I'm listening to that one tomorrow. Fuck Atari. This is good.
The skit where the guy's like, they say a computer can do my job better than me. Oh, man. They were ahead of their time.
Oh, man.
I love Gasoline Dreams because so you got like that Jimi Hendrix type thing. And then Andre comes on. It's like, man, if Andre was hip hop, this would be Jimi Hendrix. Man.
All right.
Yeah. And they had I mean, this is the kind of the start of them having massive pop songs because Miss Jackson was a huge pop song. And then so was Hey Ya on Speaker Box. So they put some, and Bob's Over Baghdad was just a great, massive, just go listen to that. Turn the friggin' speakers up to 11, roll the windows down if it's nice where you are. Even if it's not, just do it. It'll be warm enough because that beat's so friggin' hot.
And try to rap to it too. You'll fail.
Yeah, exactly. They're so good. All right. Fifth album. What do you got, Twan?
Fifth album. The best one being the fifth.
And this is where it gets into, like, you struck lightning. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You something just connected. So I have two that I'm trying to pick from. One of them is like glaring, obvious, just had an anniversary. So I'm going to skip that one. And maybe you guys, after we all go, I'll say it. But the one I'm going to go with is H2O, Nothing to Prove. It was an album that came out in 08, I think, off Bridge Nine Records. And they had an interesting career because they had the Thicker Than Water, then they had Faster Than the World, then they went major with H2O Go. Pop Sensibilities a little bit with that Memory Lane song, toured with Sum 41, took a little break, and then came back with this album, which is really meets in the middle of like the Epitaph Records days. And I think they were on MCA. I think like they went down that Newfound Glory road with MCA. I think it was with them. But this is like right in the middle. And it's perfect. Great album. I don't know if you guys know it. I know you guys know H2O, but yeah, it's less pop punk and more, you know, hardcore punk.
Yeah, I don't know this album, but like you said, I know H2O, and I know them from that major release because that was like the whole Warped Tour thing, right?
Yep,
and they were
totally.
They were everywhere. So I wonder if they took the best of what they learned on the road and having that kind of, you know, funding or just, you know, access to good tours to come back and make an album that was a, you know, whatever they picked up on the road from that.
Yeah, totally.
This is the blind spot for me, Twan. So this is another one of those situations where I need to go back and do my nerd homework that we love so much. I know of the band H2O. I just have never, it's not a band that ever, never crossed my path. So for a band like them to have a fifth album that is their, you think is their best work, I definitely got to check that out.
Yeah, I forget the first album, but yeah, this was five. Yep. And then they put out an album after this off Bridge Nine. It wasn't as good. And then they did a covers album. But yeah, Toby is the singer, and he has a pretty cool podcast too. Has some guests that we'd love to wrangle. So share the wealth, man.
Hell yeah. Or Toby himself. I mean,
or
shit.
Toby. Yeah. Toby, come on. Nate, what you got?
Nice. I got something that's kind of polar opposite to what you just mentioned, because they're kind of bigger. Kings of Leon, Come Around Sundown, fifth record in. This is a bold statement because I love this band.
This is a bold statement.
It is super bold because all their albums are fucking really good. But I love this album. And I think I just really like the flow and the, you know, the songwriting on this album is just really nice. And a great, great transition to live for these songs. And it wasn't the first album that obviously I checked out from Kings of Leon. So the reason this is a controversial statement, right, is because if you like this album as their best, it's almost like this is like the sellout album. But it's a great album. The songwriting, everything about this album is great. So
it's interesting you say this because if we have time and we do some bonus picks of Beyond Five,
yep.
they're I have one band, one album, one band. That's my bonus pick, and they're it.
Oh wow!
But we'll get into that later.
I like this band. I am not as well versed in them, I think, as you guys are, but I do really like this band. And every time I put them on, I'm like, yeah, this is cool. I'm a little surprised you picked Come Around Sundown and not. That was the one after their major success, mm-hmm. right? With Sex Is on Fire, and the opening track to that album is awesome too. I'm trying to blank on the name of it right now.
I know which one you're talking about. It's
Only by the Night.
Yep.
That's it, right?
Yeah. I was trying to think of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. They're a great band. I saw them open for we saw them open for U2, Nate, remember? They opened for U2 in Boston on your 21st.
Yeah, I didn't catch the opening set for that, unfortunately.
I did, and they were good. I was 20 still, so that's why I caught them.
Yeah, I was on the bar.
Yeah, I'm jealous of that, but I mean, I got to see Kings of Leon, so
not a
bad trade-off. No, this is a cool band. I like this band a lot. They did have that big Use Somebody, Sex Is on Fire zeitgeist for them.
Revelry,
as far as
yeah
they were big for a hot minute there in what 07 08.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. But they're more than that, which is cool. I do like this band a lot. Good band. And it's a band that I need to spend more time with because you guys have both told me to, and it's just something I gotta do.
Yeah, this is the band where my wife and I's music interests, which are completely opposite, where they meet in the middle. This is the band we've
Wait,
seen
she,
them.
She doesn't hang out in high school gyms listening to death heavy metal. Terror.
I have brought her to Terror, a Terror show.
Nice, I love it.
It was under the guise of this story so far headlining, but still
nice.
But yeah, we've seen them 4 times over the years. Kings of Leon. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Good pick, but not great pick because I disagree. So.
I think I know what album you're talking about.
I think
about
I disagree too. I like Only by the Night. I love it, Nate. Why? Like, this is why we do this.
You got to play this album. Yeah, front to back. Just this album. Nothing going on. Kind of. This would be a good vinyl album to listen to.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Tell me what you got.
I'm up for my fifth.
Yep. Fifth being their best album.
Part of me wants to go with the band that we posted about this week.
Mm-hmm.
On our Instagram, that we had the top their 10 albums, and we asked people to rank them.
Yeah,
Jimmy Eat World.
Nice.
What's the other part I want to do?
Well, I mean, I'm going with Jimmy Eat World, and I'm going with Futures. Futures is I think their best work, and I think I'm in a minority, which is kind of surprising to me because of how great this record is. But I think that's just a testament to how good they are, great they are as a band. They just have great. They know how to write songs. They put out great fucking songs. And people love Clarity. People love Bleed American. People love Integrity Blues, which came out a couple years back. But for me, it's Futures. Their fifth of their 10 albums. And I would tell you their 10th album is fucking damn good. Go listen to this band. They just write great songs.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, we posted on Instagram. Well, if you're listening, you probably follow us on there. But asking people to rank their albums. And it was either Futures or Clarity, and I think it was those two, right? Futures and Clarity.
Yeah, a lot of people picked those two. Those were their two top two.
And Bleed American Clarity, was up there for a lot of people too.
I think Clarity gets. I just did. Futures hit me differently, yeah. And I was into them with Bleed American, but Futures was like perfect for me.
So Futures to Jimmy Eat World is like the Come Around Sundown for Kings of Leon. It's a little bit later, but it's the best polished album. In that regard, for the
Nate,
fifth.
Your turn is over, bro. It's my turn.
Well, trying to get that thunder back.
No, it's cool.
The thing about where I give Futures the edge over Clarity is Futures, there's no skips.
None.
Clarity has some filler. There's some where it's like, all right, I've heard this a million times, or I'd rather listen to something else. You know what I mean? Where Futures, I'm with you. I'm with you, and that's a great album. I probably similar reason for you. Clarity, it just hits me different. You know what I mean? You can't explain it.
Well, and Work, I've heard a million times, but I want to listen to it right now because we're talking about it again, and it's just such a fucking perfect song. And I just love that band. They're a great band.
Yeah, you put it best, Twan, is you don't skip songs on this album. They're all good. If you try to listen, you're like, I'm just going to the song, I'm going to pause it. Oh, actually, yeah, I really like this song. All right. And then next thing you know, you've listened to the whole thing. It's a great, like, full length. It's like a Beatles record too. Every lyric is very sing along in a weird way.
Well, it fits. It does fit this time of year. Maybe not for you, Nate, because you're in SoCal, but it does fit this. You know, it was 11 degrees when I got up this morning. Bullshit, man. Where I'm like, man, I get home at night. I'm gonna pour myself a nice glass of something, whether it be wine or whiskey or beer, and I want to put Futures on and just kind of
chill.
Because it's just you know, ending with 23. I love that song. I mean, I'm not 23 anymore. It's been a long time since I have been, but I was around that age when it came out, so it was kind of perfect. So, yeah, it's just a great record.
All right, we want to do a freestyle lightning round for us?
Yes.
All right, so I'll go first, and I only prepped one album for this. I knew we were going to do this bonus. It's the sixth album is their best, Kings of Leon, Mechanical Bull.
Oh, nice.
Mechanical Bull, my God. Great album. Like, I don't see that band ever touching that album. And Walls was good. Walls was the one after this, which maybe you could argue that's the best. But I think this is better than, was it Come Around Sundown and
Only by the Night.
Only by the Night. I think it's better than those. But this is actually when I, again, another one where I really got into them.
Yeah. Ooh, and it's got Wait For Me, which is an amazing song.
Oh,
that song's
Super
amazing.
Super Soaker. I mean.
Yeah. Family Tree. Lots of good songs. Man, it's
got me on the ropes again. It's got full of bangers. Tone, if you don't know this, you'll love this album.
I have listened to it once. It's been a very long time, and I wasn't paying the attention to it that I needed to. So it'll come up again.
Yeah.
It will definitely come up again. This is a great, it's just a great band, is what you're telling us, yeah. Right? The both of you picking a different album as their best album, and it's late in their catalog. They're just awesome. And I agree. I think they're a really good band. So I don't think I have the connection with them that you guys both do, but I don't disagree with why you have that connection, because I do like what they do.
Yep.
I would say play it in headphones.
Yeah, headphones.
It's got the Southern, like there's a lot of sounds in there. So it's, you know, you want to listen to that in headphones, get the full experience, maybe. I don't know. Something like that.
I like it. Nate, what's your wild card? Your 6+.
You know, I didn't have a 6+, but I had a alternate 5.
All right, yeah. That works.
I'll take it.
And I feel like this band never gets any attention on here. It is John Butler Trio. I know that I've told you, Tone.
Australian.
Yeah, from us.
I know.
From Fremantle or Perth. Yeah, man. April Rising is their 5th album. Is the album that I got into them on, and it's a front to back album. And I've listened to everything that he's put out or they've put out, and this album's just crushed as everything. And it's just so freaking good. The opening song and everything is just really, really solid. And it came out at a good time. You know, 2010, I think it was. Might be mistaken. 2011, 2010, I think, actually. But yeah, it's just the perfect time. And it kind of brings you to Australia. You're like, I don't know what kind of music comes from Australia. So this is a good mix of like some kind of folk, rock, amazing guitar ship music. You know them, Tuan, apparently?
I just know they're from there because I spent probably a month in Australia last year. So I looked up like who was touring there and stuff and who was from there, and they came up. And we have a friend who's big into them.
Nice.
Episode 8. Concert Impossible, Tuan in Australia. If you want to listen to it. We do talk about Tuan's time in Australia and him seeing, I think, Eminem and Post Malone down there, maybe.
Exactly. Yep.
Yep. There you go. It's what I do.
Episode callback.
Music abroad.
Yes, Nate, you have told me to listen to this band. And when I did, I wasn't into it, but it doesn't mean that I wouldn't be into it now, I guess. I need to try again because I'm not anti. I'm always ready to try again.
Yeah, play this album also in headphones, front to back. You can't get distracted. Same thing, you know. It's the only way to really understand what we're talking about, right? So why would I choose it as the fifth? The fifth best is such an accolade. So it's got to be good. It's got to be good. What about you, Tone? What do you got for?
I have like 6 or 7 written here. Some are number 6, some are number 7, some are number 10.
Who's your latest?
Ooh, yeah. 10. What do you got? 20.
We've talked 10. About this band before. Nate and I have met this band before.
Flaming
in
Lips.
Person. What? The Flaming Lips. We've talked about this band numerous times.
I was gonna think it had to be a legacy band. Has to be.
Yep. Has to be, right? Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots.
I agree, actually.
That is their 10th record, and it is their best record. I'm sorry, it is. There's some weirdness and coolness on all the other ones. This one is a good concept. There's some indie rock. There's some electronica type stuff. It did some funky soundscapes. Like, go listen to In the Morning of the Magicians. It's on one of our playlists. If you go back a ways, they're a cool band, and this is a cool. I love this record. Fight Test, great opener. Do You Realize was their like major hit? Just really, really all around great record.
I know they have like punk roots. Is there any of that comes through?
Not really. Not really. It's a little more airy.
I mean, 10 albums deep.
Poppy.
I mean, what do you expect? Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it really is a concept album in itself, you know. The artwork and the songs and the whole flow of the album is very much, like, conducive. So no real punk things that I can think of.
This is a great headphones album, Nate, as you like to say. Great headphones album.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. 10th best. Wow. It's their
and the one after
album.
It, the one after it, At War with the Mystics, number 11,
that's great. Yep.
Really fucking good. A little more edgy, a little rockier. Great mm-hmm. album. Great album.
That's the one with the wand, right?
Yeah, the wand. I fucking love the wand. Also, I think rules. On a playlist.
I was going to say that
somewhere.
Is. I think that is. All right. Do you guys want me to give my alternate 5 that I thought I didn't say because I thought we were all going to say it? Blink self-titled.
I know. I had it too.
Ooh.
I had it written down.
I mean, Cheshire, Dude Ranch, Enema, Takeoff, and then this. I mean, are you kidding me?
It's Blink. Yeah, it's self-titled. Yeah.
Self-titled.
I agree. And that album is just perfect. It's a perfect Blink album. It's all of those previous albums rolled into one. You get bits and pieces from all of it.
Yeah, it is the ultimate album for them. It's really sad too, because if they hadn't broken up, there could maybe be a 4 or 5 album that are parallel to that. Maybe not. I don't know. such a short fuse band.
Well, on the album before, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the album before, that's really good. Like, that's a 3-album run, right? That's a damn good 3-album run.
Yeah.
I know, but they're short fuses in that they're kind of just singular to that. Like, you know, well, I guess.
Well, they were, they were fighting, right? They were at each other a little bit for self-titled.
Yeah.
But self-titled is their best record, probably because of that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Inner Turmoil might make for some nice musical stuff, you know?
But this is the one that, like, I listen back as, like, a 35-year-old, and I'm like, all right, enough of the dick jokes, enough of the immature sophomoric stuff. And it's just it's a great album that doesn't need any of that. And there's none of that on this.
Well, no, and they had moments on previous albums that would have fit here, like Adam's song on Enema, like Stay Together for the Kids on Take Off Your Pants.
Yeah,
they have some moments where you can see they're headed towards this. The light is shining that way, and they end up doing it, and it's front to back amazing.
And they never captured that magic after that.
Well, they hated each other. They were done.
And then Matt Skiba is, hey, I'm here.
Yeah. No, I think Nate did make a prediction of, geez, I don't know, 17 episodes ago, but 20 episodes ago, but it might happen. It was a prediction for 2021. We might see them back together for something. I'm not sold that's not going to happen. I think we could see that still.
That was a Twan prediction, I think. And Twan's pretty much a 10 out of 10 so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
On predictions.
I think we just are as a trio. We just have that energy. Yeah. We all just know what we're doing here. We've seen enough. We've been around the block, guys. That's why you keep coming back every week. Tell your friends.
It's like Back to the Future. Biff with the Beckett. He knows. We know all of that.
Yeah, exactly. The Red Sox won the World Series.
No, it was a good segment. It's repeatable. We'll do that one again. And maybe we'll pick up at 6 to 10. You know what I mean? We'll do the deep cuts. I mean, you got to be a Flaming Lips-esque man to do the...
Yep, for sure.
10 deep.
Hit us on the socials, at PodioSlave, Twitter, Instagram, email, Gmail, PodioSlavePodcast@gmail.com. Old school, as Nate says. And you know what? I think snail mail would be old school, but we're not going to give you our addresses just yet. So yeah, hit us there. We are very active. Just go check our Instagram. We've been talking with people all week. It's been a lot of fun having discussion over different records, different boozy vinyl type things. Yeah, we're just out here, guys. Come talk to us. We love it. We love this shit. Nerdery is our life.
Eat, drink, and sleep.
Yes. Sleep. When sleep happen?
Good question.
I don't know.
Soon-ish, maybe. Not for you, Twan, sorry. But
I was going to say, Twan doesn't sleep.
Yeah. Twan's a vampire. If you guys didn't know. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. We will check you next week. Maybe some cool things in the works. You'll have to tune in and find out.
Peace, podheads.
Cheers, all. Wait, Tone, what do you think of?
We came up with it. I think the name of the segment is Better With Age?
Question mark.
I'm doing a beard stroke as I say this.
Perfect.
Right now. Like, maybe they are better with age, or maybe not. Maybe their first album is their best, right?
Are they wiser beyond their years? How many cliches are we going to get in here?
So many cliches. Yeah. All right. Thanks for sticking with us, guys.
Bonus track.
Yes.